Hello, welcome everyone. This is Galactic Stars 2017 number two. This is the second session we're having today. I'm joined with slightly less filmmakers than expected, but again, as we talked about in the first session of these things, it's all about organization. We were here, everyone has the opportunity to come and talk, and we had in our first one, I'll update Chris and Damien, who should say hi right now. Damien, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Damien Valentine, and I'm director of Alone.
And
I'm Chris Esper, and I'm the director of The Deja Vuers.
You both have incredible names. Hold on, before I get to what I was going to talk about before with organization, both of you, I like your names so much just as names. Damien Valentine, obviously the heir of a spy novel character, and Chris, I like your name especially because it sounds like it's one name, doesn't it? Chris Esper. It sounds Spain, the full name of Chris is not Christopher, it's Chris Esper. You know, like it's something you don't know about.
Oh, well, my name at birth was Christopher, but I just go by Chris. But no, I get that a lot, actually. That does sound like one name.
But it's beautiful. I love it. So we were talking before in the last one because we had a filmmaker who said, you know, was apologizing. He had a friend there translating for him into, I believe, Portuguese to English. I'm not sure. Forgot to ask. But he was feeling bad about it. I said, you know, we've never had an issue with someone not speaking the language because even with limited language, people have been able to log on. The issue with people making the most out of online and festivals and marketing themselves and even just basic networking has been organization. So there was supposed to be a bunch more filmmakers, and I think we might have some come in late. But of course, you know, if you want people to know about your film, a couple thousand people listen to these podcasts when they come out. You know, you gotta show up. You miss 100% of the podcasts you don't take, and that's what Wayne Gretzky said. So why don't you give us a brief introduction to each of your movies, and then we can kind of talk a little bit of shop and talk about some stuff. So since we did introductions in reverse, Chris, why don't you tell us about your movie that you submitted?
Sure. So again, the name of my film is The Deja Vuers. It is a short comedy about two people that meet each other on a park bench to discover that they knew each other from a dream. And so the rest of the film kind of breaks down as to where they met, how they met, and how their dreams and realities kind of intertwine. So it leads to a lot of funny comedic banter and kind of leaves you both confused and also laughing. So it's very absurdist humor.
And Damien?
Alone. It's kind of a horror film. I was very much inspired by Alien. I mean, I love that film. But I was also interested in the idea that what if you only had one person on the ship? And what if you never find out if he thinks there's something chasing him down? But what if you show the film in a way that you never see the creature? So you're left wondering, was the creature real? Or was it just something in his head because the space madness is kind of setting in? And I wanted to leave it open to the audience to decide they could go either way.
So it's so funny that these get-togethers were not scripted. You know, everyone was just for the filmmakers that qualified, you were told to choose a time slot. But it is so funny that all the filmmakers that were supposed to be here today too sort of had the same theme of sort of horror, but not necessarily horror, but wondering and questioning reality and things like that. So I guess we'll bring it to both of you and say, you know, what makes you write something where, because especially Chris, because your film is, you are very much left wondering from a comedy whether or not there is a science fiction thing going on here. You know, there's obviously some reference to Groundhog Day and things like that, because is this, you know, at the end of Groundhog Day, you're sort of left wondering, is this science fiction or was this, you know, the imaginations of someone who needs to learn a lesson? And it was sort of the same vibe. And Damien, with your film, it was a more blatant attempt to say, you know, you should be questioning reality. You know, this is the torture of what's going on. And it's so funny that you two are the only ones here, because it's sort of like the light version and the not light version of a similar story. Damien, what made you go with a story where you're questioning reality, which is really the main device here? In my opinion, sorry, you can tell me if I'm wrong about the main device, but in my opinion, the main thing that we're playing with here is reality.
Yeah, I just kind of thought that if someone's going to be in space for a long period of time completely by themselves, what are they going to be the psychological effects on that? Because they've got no one to talk to. They're so far away from any sort of civilized planet, you can't even have any kind of radio communication because it takes so long for the signal to get back and forward. So what kind of thing would happen? And you'd get people who would be, and once the technology existed to actually go into space, you'd get people who'd want to go up there. So they would kind of plaster it. And then I just wanted to explore the idea of what would happen if someone who maybe wasn't quite equipped to go out into space for a long period of time. So that's what kind of got me thinking about it.
Were you inspired by, you know, because I've always thought, you know, there's a large element of computer science that goes on with 2001, and we've talked about 2001 twice now in this series. But, you know, part of Hal going mad, quote unquote, was that idea of lack of communication. Was that in some ways Hal was just unmonitored? It was a supercomputer left unmitigated. Did that have any influence on you, 2001, at all?
A little bit, but the there's no sort of computer control on the ship. There is a ship's computer, right. but it wasn't really about the AI aspect of it.
More that I think the commentary was, I'm sorry, I'll make the question clear. The commentary of Hal was that if you read the book especially, Hal's main function and the astronaut's main function is to align this satellite, which allows them to communicate with Earth. And that really what Hal going crazy is not out of madness, but instead it's, or a computer glitch, it's instead this idea that Hal is pretty much human. And that he needs other people to watch out for him. And that the reason the computer goes crazy is because he has no communication with the outside world. So that was, but I guess you didn't really have too much of an influence from 2001. It was just happens to be in space, and I'm drawing this parallel. So what were there any films that or other stories that drove you to do this? Or was it mostly just, I'm going to play with this idea of isolation?
Well, like I said before, Alien was kind of a big influence on the whole someone being hunted on the ship. And I kind of like the aesthetic of that, you know, that very dark, dingy looking ship.
It's so interesting you say that because, I mean, obviously the look of your film is incredible, and I can see the influence there. But when you said someone alone on the ship, you know, there is someone alone on that ship. That's the alien. The alien gets onto the ship, and it is ostensibly in there with a bunch of other creatures it doesn't understand.
That is a good way of putting it. I haven't actually considered that. So next time I watch the film, I'm going to think about that.
Yay, I did something. But I hadn't considered it until you said it. You were influenced by Alien. You know, I think that so much of sci-fi is it's hard to know where people pull what influences from. You know, visually, now that you say it, I can see, especially the – there's a lot of darkness in it. There's a lot of, tech boxes, which I just love that. I love technology that we're not necessarily engaged with. That is just there. That's a big thing for world building with me. I was a big fan of that with your movie.
Thank you.
Chris, in terms of you wanting to play with reality, was there any work that you wanted to do with this or did this come out of a specific idea?
Well, it's funny how this came about actually. I had found the script on a website called Inktip, where writers option their screenplays for producers and directors to make. And so I had discovered Inktip. I had never heard of it. I was editing a film, a short film for a local filmmaker at the time. And I asked him, "Oh, so where'd you get the script? Because I noticed he didn't write it." And he said, "I got from the source called Inktip." So I go on Inktip, I start browsing around. I hadn't written anything new that I was really inspired to do just yet. And so I was like, let me see what else there is out there that I could do. So I was browsing around Inktip, I come across the synopsis for the Deja Vuers. And so I read the synopsis. I'm like, oh, that's very different, interesting. So I contacted the writer.
What was the synopsis? Did it talk about the dream thing?
Yeah, it basically broke it down the way I broke it down, and I thought, wow, that's very unusual. And it's been a while since I had done a comedy, so I figured I'll give it a shot. So I read the script. I thought it was bizarre, weird, funny, clever, and in some ways kind of sad, especially for the character of Chuck, who, you know, says he's not made for these times. When he said that, that line, for whatever reason, I kind of identify with in a very weird way. So,
He reminds me quite a bit. Chuck, his character, Chuck sort of starts this whole thing. And Chuck reminds me a lot of, if you've ever seen the Matrix series, which I'm a big fan of, they have these shorts called the Animatrix. And Chuck reminded me of sort of these stories they would tell in the Animatrix, which talk about people who are kind of stuck in the Matrix, but are aware. You know, a big part of the stories with the Animatrix is these guys are stuck in the Matrix, but they know it and they're a little bit smart and they sort of are that line, I'm not meant for these times. They are people very much like Chuck, that they don't necessarily know what's wrong, but they know something's up. And it reminded me a lot of, he actually reminded me more of his performance rather than, I think if I'd read it on the page, reminded me more of a sci-fi character, more of something like Waking Life or, you know, any of those kind of sci-fi stories.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said that because, you know, once I bought the script and I decided I was definitely going to make this, I made the very conscious decision to have the actors play totally straight as though they're playing a drama, because I think that's how comedy works best. Because if the characters are trying to be funny, I feel as though that it wouldn't come off as being funny. It would feel like that they were trying to be funny, but the fact that they play these characters as real humans, it made the film that much more funnier and relatable. I feel.
So in terms of acting, this is a great thing to sort of pull between the two of you because we have the most opposite of styles. So, Chris, your movie is shot live action. It's shot in a very plain way in terms of not necessarily that the filmmaking is plain, but we're not doing any strange angles. It's meant to be a bizarre sort of almost a play. It's directed as, if you can permit me to say that. While on the other hand, Damien, is it entirely CGI? Is there any Photoshop? Is it hand-drawn? What were the full techniques? I don't know that was on
it's
your input.
All computer-generated animation, but most of the character motions were motion-captured with myself performing the actions.
Yeah, and for me, I genuinely have this new theory this year, that applies to both of you, that there is no such thing as the comedic actor. Because I've been watching a lot of movies in which these very serious actors are just – they kill it. They're the funniest people on screen, and that's because there's a good actor and there's bad actors, and then there's comedic writers and there's not comedic writers. I feel as though the age of the comedic actor is dead because even if you look at the great age of comedic actors, really all they were doing – were stealing stand-up bits and saying, oh, you're a comedic actor. And they were just essentially stealing Robin Williams' set and making him, you know, do Robin Williams, but they were stealing it and they gave him the job. Or same with Eddie Murphy, same with a lot of these people that someone just stole their gig. But, you know, acting in animation and acting for comedy is very similar because, you know, with a drama, you can bring whatever element you want to it, and it doesn't affect the story in a and you guys can tell me what you think about this second part of the theory, but you can bring whatever you want to a drama, and however the character's going through it, they'll go through it, and you hope that comes across. But with a comedy, of course, the end goal is the joke, is that it has to kill it has to deliver the punchline. So the idea to play it straight, that's a choice to say, let's get the punchline. And the same with animation, where we need to convey that these characters are living, which I think you did very well, Damien. How do you guys treat acting in terms of what you want in the end. As a director, you know, it's great that you were, I also rotoscope myself when I do animation, Damien, or use reference files even for stop motion and things like that. I love reference files and motion capture. And I don't know if you've used Adobe Character Creator, but there's some really powerful and fun things you can do with that. What are you thinking in the moment when you are creating animation for a character? What's your end goal of direction?
So far for all my projects I've used motion capture for, I always just try and imagine myself in the scene, like I'm actually there, because basically I'm doing it in my living room.
What are you using in your living room? Are you using motion capture dots and then going back in and tracking? Are you using tracking technology? Talk us through that so people, because a lot of people listening to the podcast won't necessarily be filmmakers. So talk us through your workflow a little bit, because that is what acting is in animation for people that don't know. The acting in animation, we call it, you know, the way the character moves. That's the acting. And really, as good as the voice work is in any movie, that's the acting. That's what it comes down to. So talk us through your workflow.
All right. Okay. Yeah, so basically what I'm using is called the Perception Neuron Motion Capture Suit. And if you've watched any behind-the-scenes films where they've done motion capture, like for Lord of the Rings and all that kind of stuff, you see someone with a bright-coloured suit with all the sensibles on it. It's not like that at all.
Famous Andy Serkis, yeah.
Yeah. I have tried some of his movements just to try and capture what kind of fun he must have had. It's just a series of sensors with straps on, so you can just wear it over normal clothes. You have like a harness for the main torso, and you have one for each thigh, the knee, and your foot. And again, you have for your arms, you have one just below the shoulder, one further down near the elbow, and then you have some gloves to do all the finger animations.
So you have this device, which I just looked up a picture just to see, because I thought maybe you were using, reference marks and things like that. So are the characters, before you put that on, are the characters already modeled?
Yeah, I like to design the characters first. The software I used for the animation is called iClone. So that's real-time animation. So when you render it out, you don't have to spend sort of days or weeks rendering scenes. But it still looks really fantastic. And there's a character creation tool in that as well, so you can dress them in different outfits, you can change the textures on the clothes, you can reshape the clothes as well, so if you wanted to make a t-shirt longer, you can just drag bits of it around. It's really good for things like that, and it works the same way for faces as well, so you've got different slider bars, so you can adjust things like the shape of the nose, and it's not just like a big nose or a small nose, you've got so much fine detail on it. You can even go down to length of fingernails and the color of the fingernails and all that kind of stuff. There's so much you can do with it. So that's how I create my characters. And I like to create the characters as I'm writing the script so that as I'm coming up with the dialogue, I can picture how they look in my mind and it helps.
So that's so interesting that because generally with animation we have a very very strict work through and what it is normal, you know, I do a lot of stop motion, I do a lot of animation and stuff, and generally you try not to break from that. We have a story element, we have then we go into design, and then there's storyboard, and then generally if you go the Simpsons route, which is to do voice work and then animation and then back into voice. Or, a lot of international films will just kind of animate and then get more of the dialogue in later, even for films natively in those languages. You are using this technology in a way that I really respect, where you're saying, I don't need to do everything at once. You know, I don't need to necessarily get it all the way it is. I can start writing and design a little and start and write again and design a little. You know, that's a really interesting way to go about it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's just because I'm doing most of all this kind of stuff all by myself. I kind of have to figure out my own sort of workflow, what works best for me. So then I will send off the script to the voice actors, and sometimes it's local people who will meet up and they can bounce off each other. Sometimes I have people who like to voice act for me who live in different parts of the world, so meeting up with them isn't very practical. So we'll do something over Skype. So sometimes we do it kind of individually and sometimes as a group. It depends on what's needed and what works best for everyone. And
so I'm a filmmaker that puts himself in things too, just because I want to try it before we, because I mean, I think we're interested in this process because it's interesting. And so I've rotoscoped myself in, and I actually do a lot of the voices for my stuff. I'm very much inspired by the work of Seth MacFarlane and other great animators that have put their voices into things. And then of course we're both rotoscoping ourselves. Chris, how do you feel about putting yourself into the movie?
I do it very often, actually. I didn't do it with this one, but I've done it with my previous ones. For me, it comes from Hitchcock. I'm very inspired by Hitchcock. Big fan of his.
Well, good evening to you. I actually think it's becoming more and more possible for filmmakers to put themselves in things because, of course, in Damien and my case, it's easier. We're using reference files, and even easier in Damien's case to put himself in the film because, you know, you're not going to be seeing anything. You could turn a monitor around even, you know, you're not even having to worry about light. You could be seeing it. You could be directing in a very personal way where, you know, when I do rotoscope for myself, I'll sometimes have a monitor up and I'll do the actions and I'll be able to look at it while I'm doing it. But for you, I mean, you could literally be looking at a monitor, looking at yourself and be directing and acting simultaneously, almost in real time, you know, despite render delays.
Yeah, pretty much. Because when I'm doing the motion capture, I have my laptop set up in the downstairs in this living room. Just so I can, obviously you need something to hook up the suit too. And I can just, I'll perform an action, record it, and then I can watch it, play it back. If I'm not happy with it, I can just go do it again as many times as I need to until I'm happy with the result. So it's just very quick. And it's one of the reasons I like doing all the motion myself is because I can just do that. I could be working on a scene. I think, well, this isn't actually working quite right. So I'll go downstairs, put the suit on, do it again, come back up. And if I like it, I'm happy. If I don't, I can do it again. Whereas if I've got other people doing the suits, I have to arrange time to do that. That's how it works. But I like being able to do things immediately and having the control to do it exactly the way I want it. And I'm very good at picturing in my head how I want the scene to look. So I can rehearse the performance I want to do a couple of times before I actually do it. But, you know, I'm very specific on what I want, so I just find it so much easier to do it myself.
So I guess the other perspective of this is, you know, Chris's element of it, because Damien is literally talking about taking an action, going downstairs and re-exporting it, you know, as it's happening, changing something as minute as the way a character moves its hand, you know, and doing reshoots in a few minutes. And I'm, you know, with the stop motion, there's a lot of, it's obviously not as easy, but and with Character Creator, it is that easy. And with the hand-drawn animation, it is that easy as to, you know, just change it as I go along the way. But there's sort of an in between Damien's technique, which is so minute and able to change so quickly, and mine, which I can change at certain phases at a certain point, you know, that's it. It's in the can. We have to work with what we have with. How do you feel, Chris, about when you do a comedy scene or you do any sort of scene and you're in front of the camera, you know, you're not behind the gate, you're not sitting at the monitor, you're not even hearing audio, you know, there's sort of a mystery there. If you put yourself in the scene, do you go and watch the take back right away? How do you go about that acting yourself in it when, of course, you're not getting that third person perspective as a director?
Well, I never act in my own films. I never give myself dialogue. I just like walk in and walk out as like an extra. But if that is the case, I do watch back playback immediately to see what I have and kind of make a decision from there. But for the most part, I'm always behind the camera, watching the actors and trying to watch it as though I'm in the audience, like a viewer watching the film before me.
So Damien mentioned working with actors from far away, but you just bought this script from far away. Has the writer of the movie actually seen the final product?
Oh yeah. Yeah. He was with me along the way when I was doing rough cuts. I would send him rough cuts. I got him very involved in it because I said, listen, you know, at the end of the day, you know, your name is on this. You wrote the script. So, you know, I'm happy, but if you're happy, then I'm happier. you know? And so I would send him rough cuts. You know, he would give me, you know, some of his notes, and I would tell him what I think as well. We would kind of collaborate, and if there was something I didn't like, and then he would watch it again, he would agree with me, and vice versa. If there was something he didn't like that I didn't see, then I would say, oh, you know what? You're absolutely right. So we had a good working relationship in that way.
I want to throw this to both of you. Oh, I got on somebody's headphones there. I wanted to throw this to both of you because we talked about this in our last did somebody unplug their headphones? I'm hearing myself through the speakers.
Not me.
Nope, not me.
Okay, well, we'll just go with it. We were talking about on our last broadcast things that went wrong in the filming that you just had to roll with and adapt to, or something that you totally failed at in creating in the process. It sounds to me as though from the outset, you guys had a large amount of editing room to work with, but was there something that you tried that you wanted to do that just didn't work effect wise or look wise or something and just totally failed at? We'll start with Chris.
Well, it's funny you mentioned about the camera work because there was actually a couple of takes where we broke out a slider, we broke out a Movi, trying to get moving shots. It just didn't feel right because the actors didn't have very much to do blocking wise. It felt forced. So I thought, you know what? Maybe it's best that we don't keep the camera moving so much or as little as possible, because that will give the feeling of witnessing a dream, like being a voyeur almost, like you're on the outside looking in. So I use that to my advantage. And another thing too, when shooting the thing, we were shooting in a park, and so of course audio becomes a problem because there's a lot of outdoor activity. I walked away every day thinking for sure we're gonna have to ADR the whole thing. To my complete amazement, there is not one bit of ADR in that film. The whole thing is what was recorded on the set. We got incredibly lucky because we basically had four sources of audio for every take. We had the boom, and each actor was wearing a lavalier microphone, and so that helped a great deal.
That's a lot of coverage.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. We got plenty of coverage because it's so easy to make your film sound terrible, because you know sound can kill your film. Any filmmaker would tell you that. But bad sound, it would just kill it.
So I want to interrupt because for people that aren't filmmakers, ADR is audio dialogue replacement. Every single scene on the Millennium Falcon is done in ADR. If you want to, we've been ruining Star Wars effects throughout this whole thing. The Millennium Falcon is made out of plastic. It sounds very bad. Every single piece of dialogue on there is ADR. And lavalier mics and coverage, what we're talking about right now is the idea that you get every single shot you can on the day of, and lavaliers are those lapel mics you often see people wearing on the news. They go to someone's shirt, and a boom mic is a pole. And the old adage with killing the sound is that bad sound is very noticeable, and great sound you don't notice at all, is the old expression I had heard.
Mm-hmm. That is certainly correct. You know, the other adage too is people argue that you could have lighting and video that isn't really above par and get away with it if your sound is okay, which I don't know if I fully believe that, because
believe that. Look, there's so many shows that are just great radio shows, and you don't even – I mean, think about how many shows nowadays people are saying they put on in the background because they don't care.
You know, yeah, no, it's very true.
More and more popular too.
Yeah, no, that's when you put it that way. Yeah, no, I do agree with that. But yeah, we got very lucky in that respect. And we had a lot of coverage. We did a lot of takes for most of the angles. And there was a lot of improv. And there was a whole scene that was cut as well, because it was just going on for way too long.
So Damien, any stories of, same question, things that just didn't work, you tried, totally failed?
There's a scene where the main character gets chased down a corridor, and at the end of that, he crawls into an air duct and you see him crawling through the ship. And the idea was I wanted him to show him actually getting into the air duct and crawling away from the creature he thought was chasing him. And then at the other end of that, he sort of kicks open the vent and jumps out. Now, the motion capture suit I've got is really good for anything where you're on the ground, but if you try and jump in the air, it's one of the weaknesses it has. It doesn't really know how to handle the character positioning for that. So when I tried to jump up, to climb into the vent, basically I climbed up onto the sofa, onto the couch, and then I turned around and jumped down. It really confused the character modeling in that. So I kind of had to be very careful working around the animations that came with that. And I feel like I did, but it was kind of a challenge.
You actually had to, you were using something as a tool and it ended up being a hindrance in that case, that it was, it could not do the something which, you know, animation wise is not simple, but it's one of the easier actions to do, a jump, which is really just the character's got to go up, you know, but it's, but you know, even when you look at, if you're not an animation, in animation, if you don't animate or you don't really study animation, watch a cartoon or something and watch a character. I mean, there's very little actual movement usually in the way an object moves up. It's really just going up in the air. Even a complicated jump like a backflip is simple compared to walking, which is, you know, much more difficult, much more intense, or even talking. So it's so funny that this thing, which is not easy for any no animation is easy necessarily, but much simpler than something like crawling on a couch, which has all this character to it and there's things in the way and there's objects to take in account for when you're animating, and that you were like, oh, that was so easy. But a jump became difficult.
Yeah, the crawling was much easier than compared to jump, because basically what's happening is you could, when you're doing the motion capture, you've got your character in this 3D world, and the way the suit works is it automatically thinks wherever my feet are, they should be on the ground. So in the real world, my body is getting higher as I get onto the couch. So anyone imagining a couch, you kind of got that height. You can imagine that height difference between the floor and the couch. But as far as the software was concerned, it still thought I was on the floor. So it had this kind of really weird movement where my character was looked like he was stepping up, but wasn't actually moving up.
I would love to see like all these like glitch things of like where the software fails, like this weird sliding down of you crawling onto a couch and these bad jumps. Like, I would love to watch a reel of these blank spots in this thing's technology, because it looks really, I mean, honestly, I would be hard pressed to think that you had problems, because the film really is captured well, CGI wise. So I would just love to watch like a blooper reel of these insane motions, because they sound so, because now that I'm thinking about it, I'm trying to be like a computer. I'm like, okay, his feet are moving up and he's not moving up. So how do I express the movement of his knees? Like, it's very, oh, I really want to see them.
I have to put together that blooper reel, because I've done a couple of other projects as well that use the motion capture suit for, and again with them I had similar issues of different things, so I think between them I could put together quite a good rather entertaining reel of characters not behaving the way they should.
And we're going to sort of get to the end here, but this was great having the parallels between these two movies are very odd that they would be together. I hope that when people eventually see your works put side by side, if they ever get a chance to, they will very much not understand that these parallels were, like, it's very odd that you two were brought together. They're very different films, but in some ways very similar. So Chris, what are you working on next is the question we're asking everyone at the end here.
A couple of things. I'm right now, I'm in the process of editing a crime drama short film that I just completed. And as far as and then there's other future projects, but the big thing right now is I just finished writing my first feature, co-wrote my first feature. It's funny.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And it's funny you talk about animation, because it actually is a stop motion animated film. And we just had a table read the other night. We got a couple actors together, read the script, and got some pretty amazing feedback. So yeah, that's one of the things coming up, and you know, the goal is to just keep growing, you know, and keep keep creating, keep trying different things. And that's really about it.
Wow, that's amazing. Have you done any stop motion before?
I did in college. Yeah, I did a lot of claymation. I did a lot of I did an animation with a Rubik's Cube, which was a lot of fun. Wow. You know, changing the Rubik's Cube. Yeah, it was challenging. I think it took me about 5 hours just a 1 minute of film that it came out to be.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. If you're looking for help, we can link up. That's the point of this, is that one of the points of this show here is I'm not afraid to sort of network in front of people. I mean, Damian, I think I'm a pretty good voice actor. I get jobs every once in a while doing it, and I'd love to do a voice for you. And if you need stop motion, Chris, I'd be happy to help. Part of my thing with film festivals is that these things, and why we do these talking sessions, even when we do the live events in Boston, we don't watch a lot of the movie. And I mean, I'm the lucky one, I get to watch all the movies, but for me, I always got frustrated when I was at a film festival and my movie would be in it, and then sitting next to the filmmaker next to me and his film comes on screen, I go, oh, I want to work with this person. And or his or her film comes up and I'm sitting next to them in a theater. But we can't talk to each other. It's so silly. So for me, part of this was, you know, I really hope that you guys take an interest in each other's works and you guys get to meet each other, because really a lot of film festivals will pretend to have all these connections and things like that. But in reality, the best connections you can make are the other people who are showing their films, you know, especially these two techniques you guys have, disparately different filmmaking techniques. Those are the people that you want to link up. So it's I hope one day all three of us get to work together, and we won't, between all three of our techniques, none of us will have to do anything. We'll just strap on these. We'll buy the script. We'll strap on the suits, and then we'll act it out. It'll take us 4 minutes. I'm excited to see what you have next for this stop motion thing. I don't hear a lot of, was not expecting you to hear stop motion. Not a lot of stop motion people out there.
It's sad. It's kind of a dying art. And same with puppetry. You know, I grew up on the Muppets and, you know, things like that. So I studied puppetry in high school, you know, and was interested in that, and stop motion, you know, like the work. But guys like Phil Tippett, you know, the work that he did on Star Wars and that sort of thing, it's amazing. You don't hear about it, you know.
Yeah, he was really really something else. Those guys. But you know, I would say transitioning flawlessly over to Damian, most people would argue that nowadays the modern puppeteer is the motion capture artist. Would you agree with that, Damian? As we start to talk about what you're doing next.
Yeah, I guess there's going to be some truth to that. I don't really want to feel like I'm killing off the puppetry thing, because I really like the practical effects that you see, used to see in a lot of films. And I'm glad that there's been a little bit of a comeback with that, with films like Prometheus and Star Wars. And I know that Prometheus is actually a great film, but I did like all the practical creature effects and things like that. And Last Jedi had some puppet creatures in it, especially in the cantina scene.
I can send you some stuff I've done with Character Creator, but I did a project in which I took clay elements and ran them through the same sort of programming of character animation. Have you considered using live elements into your, you know, with 3D scanners and things like that, or just flat images, you know, at SVG into your program at all?
A couple of years ago, I did do this animated project where we had a live person appearing in a kind of virtual world. So we converted a hotel room into a green screen studio, and we really hoped that the hotel staff didn't come in and find us doing that.
Trust me, you're the least weird thing they would walk in on that week.
Probably.
I see your room is entirely green. Great. Do you need more towels? They're happy.
So yeah, basically she was, so we filmed her doing live action stuff in front of the green screen and put her inside this virtual fantasy world. And looking back at it, it does look a bit ropey now, but that was part of the idea, was it wasn't meant to look realistic. It was meant to look kind of very cartoony. So I think that's kind of the closest I've come to what you were describing there.
It's hard to get that realism. And a lot of times, you end up having to lean into a non-real thing or finding an effect that makes it look real. But I would love to see that, because that seems very cool.
I'll have to send you a link to that then.
Yeah, please do. I mean, you know, part of this too is linking up with each other. If you guys want, what you can do is say your I think Twitter's the easiest way for people to link up nowadays. Do you guys have Twitters or Instagrams or anything like that, or any social media?
Yes. Yeah. To all those.
Yeah, so give us your Twitter, because that's where I'm big at. I love Twitter.
So my Twitter handle is @Chris_Esper. Facebook, it's also just my name. Instagram is also Chris_Esper.
Beautiful. So I'll follow you on all of those. Damien, not only tell us your social media, but tell us what you're working on next, which we sort of glazed past as I asked you about some weird, strange past project.
Well, I'll do the social media first, since we're already talking about that. I do have a Twitter account, which I rarely use, so I won't bother sharing that. But on Facebook, I have Coded Transmission Studios, Facebook page. I also tend to make a new page for some big projects, so it's kind of its own separate thing. So you just find me on Coded Transmission Studios for now. And
Coded Transmission Studios, cool. Yeah. And what are the new pages you plan on making? What's next?
Well, I make an animated web series called Chronicles of Humanity. There's a Facebook page for that, which is Chronicles of Humanity.
Very simple.
Alone actually takes place in that world. It's a separate cool. from the main story. It's just a little side bit I wanted to do. So what I'm working next is two more stories that take place in that world. One is another side story, like Alone. It's not going to be a horror story, but I feel like it's not really connected to any of the other parts of the main storyline. And of course, I got to continue that story with the fifth season, which I'm starting to write down ideas for.
So what's the general, so if they're not usually horror, give us like the general scope about what's it going to be about? Give us what the general premise was of the last season, I guess.
Okay, so I'll give you a general idea of the whole series, because the last season, it's a very complex story. It's like trying to jump into the Game of Thrones. Like if you try to describe the latest season of Game of Thrones.
Hold on, now I have some movie advice. Here's a great way to jump into Game of Thrones. Just don't care about what they're really saying, because the only people that follow Game of Thrones totally are really not enjoying the series. They're frustrated by every single. So I watch Game of Thrones. I don't even know any of their names. So throw me in. Go deep into it. What's the general idea of the story?
All right. So
For Damien's series, go back and watch every single episode. But for Game of Thrones, who cares? Okay. Yeah, Damien's series, what's the general idea of the series?
It's set in the future, about 300 years in the future. There was a mining accident.
Oh, come on, give us a year.
20.
Do it proper futury. In the year
2340.
In the year 2340.
Yeah, there we go. There's a mining accident, and
there's a mining accident. I put to this. I'm sorry.
So a lot of people died, and the rest of the people who lived on that colony. But they rebelled against the government because they wanted safer work conditions and all that kind of stuff. And the government basically said no. There's a battle, and the colony was destroyed in that battle. There's one survivor.
Most undersold battle of all time. Yeah. There was a battle.
Yeah, this is the first episode I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. So that's crazy. So there's a battle. Lots of people die. Good.
And then there's only one survivor who then went on a quest because she thought the government had deliberately sabotaged the colony. So she kind of went on a quest to find out what really happened and who was responsible and all that kind of thing. But as the story progresses, you kind of realize that the people who did all this stuff are not necessarily the villains of the story. And the person who you think is the hero of the story might not be.
Ooh. So yeah, this is going to get complicated. So what's that one called again?
It's called Chronicles of Humanity. And the storyline I just described covered the first three seasons. And then season four, I continued the storyline with a couple of loose threads, which I deliberately left open because I had another idea I wanted to do. But I didn't really feel like...
That's going to be season five.
No, this is season four.
Well, covering the loose ends will be season five.
Yeah. So basically, there's some story elements that I couldn't really fit in with tying up the main storyline because it would just been too much. So I deliberately.
What you gotta do next is you take those storylines and you can buy these sort of space saber bags at Target or at, you know, Walmart, and you put the storylines in those safe the space saber bags. And you can just vacuum them. You can fit tons of storylines. That's my horrible joke. and a way of also saying, Chris, we skipped over what your thing was about because you said stop motion. What is your project gonna be about?
Well, I'm not at liberty to say at this time.
Oh, okay, of course. I always say Mr. NDA goes to Washington. That's what I call it. So thank you. Thank you both so much for coming on, and we hope to see you next season. I'm going to stop the